Hello, Jughead. This is everybody, and welcome to Everybody's Basement. Today, I'd like to start off by acknowledging our new patron at Patreon. His name is Chris Thompson, and he came in at the $10 tier. Thank you, Chris. I really do appreciate that. What is his Patreon, you ask? Well, you can go to www.jugheadsbasementpodcast.com, press this little teeny button that says Patreon, and it'll whiz you to a new location where you can join at the $2, $5, and $10 tiers. At the $2 tier, you get one unedited video a month given to you, plus also the audio podcast brought to you a little bit earlier than that home audience, and without commercials. At the $5 and $10 tier, you get all of that, and you also get shit in the mail. And you also get every episode unedited and brought to you in video form. That's pretty amazing. So please do that. Also, there's a new option where you can pay for the whole year at once, so you can just get it out of the way and not think about it ever again, which is really good for me and you. And you can do that at the $2, $5, and $10 tier, and you get a discount. I think it's like 7 or 10% discount. That's amazing. Also, you get question and answer sessions with me personally. That's amazing. Soon you'll get them from Japan. So hop on it. Please do support the show. It really, really, really does help a lot. And the show is getting stronger, I feel. And a lot of that is due to my patrons that help out as much as they can. If you can't do that, I completely understand. But please, if you listen to this consistently, please do one of these things I'm about to mention. Either share it with every fucking person you know, or every person you know that is a person that you respect. Or just people you don't respect, but you think they listen to good music. It's a complicated world nowadays. Also, you can go to iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts, and give a review. Or you can just give a star review too. 4 or 5 stars would be great. Or the last thing you can do is, once you go to www.jugheadsbasementpodcast.com, you can also press a little button that says PayPal, and you can give a one-time donation, anything from 2 cents to $6 zoo billion. That's money that is good for only animals, so don't really do that. Give something like $10 or $15. That would be great. A lot of that money goes to buying the records from the people who I have on the show, and also to help support me so I can put in enough hours to bring you all of this material. Speaking of material, I'm helping out one of my friends. She gave me a little cash, and we've been doing some ads for her. And this one, Kevin, is from a band called The Apers, and he had a song called Little Lost Girl, and it is my assumption that Athena may have actually got the name of her company from Little Lost Girl. Take a hop over to www.littlelostgirlmedia and check out what they have there. They put out this really cool thing. They put out 8 tracks. Yeah, I know. My band, The Mitochondriacs, have something coming out on cassette on a different label, but she does 8 tracks. That's crazy. So please go check it out. That's enough of a nothing. Let's get to it. Now you're listening to All Mosh, No Brain by Insanity Alert, released in 2019 on the record 666 Pack. Hello everybody, and welcome to Jughead's Basement, episode 138, subcategory Lo-Fi Interviews with Hi-Fi Guests. This week, Kevin Apers of the bands Sweatpants Party, Insanity Alert, and The Apers. Today, Kevin talks to us about family life, being a punk rock Freemason, Monster Zero Records, love and respect for and from diverse music scenes, Insanity Alert, self-titled Sweatpants Party, Everything is Connected, and much, much, much Monster Insanity Sweatpants more! Let's go! From it all, the limitation, oh, boss, no brain.
Recording in progress.
Jawohl.
Wow.
Jawohl.
I can hear you. I can see you and hear you.
But it's been a while that I use Zoom. How are you, John?
Good, good, good. I had this on my bed.
Future John here. Obviously, you can't see the shirt I'm wearing if you're listening to the audio, but I have on a Monster Zero Records shirt that Kevin gave me when I was visiting him in Innsbruck about 4 years ago.
Waiting for tonight's interview, which I reversed us. That's what I did.
I won't be bursting in this much on us, but I think it's funny right now. But I actually got a message from Kevin in the morning about 20 minutes before we were supposed to do our interview. I was still asleep. My sleep schedule is pretty crazy because of my Skyping with Nanako in Japan. But him and I are pretty old friends, and you'll see this goes pretty smoothly with very little amount of notes. Let's get to Kevin and me.
I didn't think it was tomorrow, but I reversed my... I was thinking my 8 p.m., your 1 p.m., so that's what I was doing.
Future John again, just a little bit more of context. Me and Kevin Apers have been trying to do this interview for about 3 years. He canceled on me a couple times, and I canceled on him quite a few times. So it was actually kind of funny that this happened again, but I was determined to make it happen, and so was he.
I was thinking like, okay...
But you're right, though. On the schedule, I did do it for tomorrow, but I was ready for today, but just not now. But I had this on my bed, waiting to wear it for today.
Yeah, it's still good. Still looks good on you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm surprised. You know, during the pandemic, I still fit in my clothes.
Yeah. Tricky as fuck. Try living with your parents, man. My parents for the last 4 months, so just they keep feeding me the whole time.
Yeah, that's part of their job, I think.
Apparently, yes. I totally forgot that after been over 20 years since I left the house. So I came back for a couple of months.
So you're in Rotterdam now?
No. My parents also live in Innsbruck.
That's right. Okay. I actually have it down to talk about family, so I guess we could just dive right into that. I'm really close to my younger sister, and I know you're pretty close to your sister too, so I find that genuine and nice about you.
Yeah. We were only two of us. So we basically grew up together. We were 2 years apart, but she's a bit more, has always been a bit more older than her age. And I've always been a bit younger than my age. So we only were one class apart as well, because we were both born in the fall. And in Holland, that's exactly the line where they decide if you go to the 1 year or you stay another year.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, I wasn't the fastest kid and my sister was a lot faster. So we're only like, we're 2 years apart, but only one school year apart.
Wow. Did you find that you just had common friends too? Did you gravitate towards the same type of people or?
At certain periods in our lives. When we were both teenagers, we had a lot of the same friends, both going to the same concerts, growing up in the same area, you know, so we didn't get too far. So most all the alternative people were pretty much friends. And then guys started hitting on my sister and stuff like that. So, but then when in our 20s, early 30s, we were a bit different. She was studying a lot. I was abroad with the band, always on tour. Yeah, so now early 30s, we sort of reunited in the snowy mountains of Innsbruck.
You know, I've been following Discogs now more for my interviews. They say they seem to be consistent pretty good. You're a little bit confusing for them because they don't have like all of your Apers stuff with your Insanity Alert stuff for some reason. They have Kevin Stout, and then they have Kevin Apers as separate people in some ways here. But you've been pretty... what I was trying to do before I got online in my 30 minutes of study was see if you did actually have some kind of release every year since you've been active, almost like 96. And it's pretty close. You've had lots of releases, even if it's like re-releases or something like that. You've been pretty consistent as a creator, I think.
I really have no track of that. I keep track of the shows that I play. And as for Discogs, I used it a while to sell records. And then I got pretty bored of it because some stuff got lost. But now I recently started collecting 80s hair metal glam tapes. And Discogs is really the place to be. So I just added 7 or 8 tapes now to my collection.
You know, I'm surprised when people say that they've used them for actually getting stuff, because I always use them just as a source. So I guess they don't get any income from me because I just use it as a source for like information on people. But it is a purchasing thing, right? Like it is a network for...
I think Chris Mock spent a good year payment of people on Discogs already. He's always on Discogs.
Kevin's internet was a bit sketchy, but I think I cut out most of that and it got better as we went along. But I'm pretty sure he's talking about Chris from the Mugwumps, who was actually interviewed on my podcast. He was on episode 58. Back to Kevin.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's pretty, at least for my taste, it's pretty thorough when I'm doing studying about somebody. It seems to have, I mean, I really do. I'm still one of those that's still committed to Wikipedia. I make fun of it a lot because it's, you know, it's fan generated in some ways. So you'll have some misinformation and stuff, but it's still pretty good.
Probably Discogs the same, right?
Yeah. I would think so.
I mean, there was at one point what bothered me a little bit about Discogs. I was just going to sell some records. So I was going to put them on there, yeah, label, all that stuff. But then the questions kept on coming, like, what condition is it? Is it near mint? Is it near mint plus? Is it mint, almost mint? Then the questions kept on going. I'm like, what? I listen to music. I'm not the biggest record collector when it comes to the perfect item. You know, for me, it's the music that's on there. And there was a time that I collected it. And I can say I made a fair amount of money on your records and those of Joe Queers when I started selling them. Spent my first years in Innsbruck not doing anything, just selling Screeching Weasel and Queers records.
I did a little bit of that myself, too. So.
As you should. I'm saving all the Apers and Monster Zero records for about 10, 20 years when I want to do holidays.
Yeah, my friend Eddie, who I do the Mitochondriacs with, he was over the other day, and he's a record collector and now seller the last couple of years. And he was saying that what's difficult is not just, you know, selling records and you got to package them and you got to keep track of everything. But he says everyone, especially punks, want to like engage in conversation with you too. So half of your time has actually been spent just like chatting with someone who's going to buy your record.
Imagine, yeah, not so many people ask me. Sometimes people would buy something and ask me if I was from the Apers, but that's basically where it stopped then.
Yeah. Now, I was also noticing that Monster Zero Records, the website is only updated through 20. Have you transitioned to just digital releases or what's going on?
I am super lazy. Okay. Job. Irma, a very nice girl from Italy, used to help me, but she was busy. And then I tried to do it myself, but turns out that after 44 years on this planet, I'm still not the king of HTML. And everything is kind of weird, so I just set it back to the way she put it, and I am working on it. The records are all in the store, but as for the real info, I should really do that. Which reminds, let me write that down.
Yeah, please do, because I'll make notes too.
I got a lot of stuff to do, but I'm gonna have a lot of more time the next 3-4 months as Lisa and me are moving to Paris for 3 months. To explore the city and its its surroundings. And I mean, we saved up. That's why I live with my parents, in order to save some rent, saved the money for Paris. And yeah, we're going to go there for 3-4 months and see what we can do. So I'm going to have time to do stuff. I actually made a whole list of like stuff that I've been wanting to do for a few years. It's like sort of like time consuming, like this. Doing the website's not that time consuming, but 1-2 nights, you know, you're going to have to sit down for it if you want to do it right and want to get all the infos right. And so, yeah, looking forward to that.
Well, now that you're a little bit transient, where do you keep your back stock? I mean, I remember when I would stay with you in Innsbruck, it was in that, you kept it in that apartment mostly, all your records and stuff.
Now it's at Lisa's mom's place.
Yeah.
It's about 30 kilometers. So let's say 15 to 20 miles drive from here. Yeah, I'm going to have to bring some to Paris. I got to save parking. A friend of mine has a parking in his basement that I can use, and it's a gated community, so I'm gonna put the car there. I'm not gonna use it in Paris, obviously, because that would make same as a car in New York or London would make absolutely no sense.
Yeah
I'm gonna use that as a little warehouse where I'm gonna put most of the releases. Gonna bring some to the apartment that we're gonna rent, and if I'm really in need, I can always ask Lisa's mom to send it, and then a box of what I would need would be there in 3-4 days. So it's going to be interesting, but it's going to work out.
Kevin, this is not an insult. It might not even sound as an insult as a question, but I do feel like even running a label like this is, well, you have to do it through passion. You're probably breaking even, or maybe not even, I don't know. I don't want to get too much into the finances, but you must want to do it, right?
I absolutely love it. And it's,
what do you get out of it then, do you think?
Yeah, let's begin by saying that I have a really loyal following of people that buy the records. I do it all by myself, and I don't do it very professionals at times too. I forget stuff. People write me, hey, I ordered two of those and there's only one in the box or stuff like that. But I really love doing it. I meet a lot of people through it. It's been what I've been doing since I was 18. When I started the Apers, and it's basically relying on the same people, the same sources and same connections. But the combination of what I would do it with the bands, with a little bit of working at my sister's restaurant, with my metal bands, everything together brings in enough for me to have a cool life, not to buy Volkswagen Golf GTEs and not to travel the world in 5-star hotels, but yeah, just all together. It's sometimes it's a shitty lot of work, you know, but I'm doing it by myself. I'm sitting here sometimes in my boxer shorts, wrapping up stuff, writing people, doing a new mail order. And that's how it works. I don't have to pay anyone. No one works for me. So yeah, 1 month it's good. Some months it's not so good. During the pandemic, it really increased. A lot of people showed their support. That's also when I started doing pre-orders, because I saw all the other labels doing pre-orders and I was like, who does a pre-order? Just wait till the record gets there. It makes sense in a way because it provides a little bit of cash flow. And it's not even about actually having the money, like making a profit, but the cash flow is super important because then you can do stuff. You can buy some stickers, you can buy new wrapping paper and tape, and you can order a new order at Bandcamp. And that's cool because, yeah, basically me is Month Zero and Month Zero is me. So it's really connected. So if the label has some money, I have some money. And if the label doesn't have any money, I will put it in the label and vice versa. And that's, so it's very hybrid. To answer your first question, I absolutely still love doing it. I put out records from people all over the world. I just did the Wimpy's from Japan, you know, and I've been talking to him, and then I write him on the Line Messenger, and I write with Pepe from Sugus. And
I just want to put a word in for these two bands he just mentioned because they mean a lot to me too. The Wimpy's are a Beach Boy queers influenced rock and roll punk band out of Osaka and Nagoya. Really great, tight music and singing. And he also mentioned their Pepe from a band called Sugus, which is sugar in English, and they are from Madrid. And Pepe means a lot to me and even a Blackouts because he used to book all our shows there, and he's a really great guy. So check those two bands out, Sugus, S-U-G-U-S, and The Wimpy's.
I'm in touch with all my friends, and I send out a mail order, and then I'm very proud to see that some people, when they used to order like all the stuff that I traded with other labels, and now you sometimes, like, actually 80-90% of the orders is just Monster Zero releases, you know, just bands from on my label. And that's, yeah, it's great, and it's for those bands as well, you know. It works together. Every band lifts the other band up. I wasn't there when Lookout did their stuff, but I've always imagined it that it went like that, you know, like everyone was helping each other and keeping it capiguli positive, which is a very important thing. Which I really learned from him.
Yeah. You got to live. Everyone has to live a little in Kepi land.
Yeah, man. The rent's going to go up there too, but that's what the pandemic does to you.
I can't deny that the podcast actually went up in viewership and also in my ability to contact people too. So, I mean, tragedies sometimes do that. You know, some people benefit and some people don't.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, like you put, I think you with your podcast in that case, you also put it back, you know. You also, people had nothing to do, and then they started learning stuff and like meeting new people through your podcast, and that's still punk rock, man.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, yeah, once again, I asked that question to you about the passion for doing it and also financial benefits, is because that's kind of how I live too. Like I like to make money. I could even say I love to make money. But I can't ever really seem like I'm always perplexed by these people that go into school to be business majors, but they don't really have a passion for anything except for the idea of being a business manager, you know? I guess the world might need people like that, but it doesn't seem to me to mean anything if it's not attached to some sort of thing you want to change or do.
If you put it that way, the percentage of people living that way is way bigger than the people that do what we do.
You think so?
Yeah, of course. But that's what I think so. I mean, like, I was recently talking to Lisa about that. Lisa, my wife, by the way, got married.
Oh, when did that happen?
That happened in June at the Garda Lake in Italy.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thanks, man. It was 4 years in the making, also due to the pandemic. It was sort of canceled and postponed a few times. Yeah, now we actually did it. But I was talking to Lisa about that whole Freemasons thing. Oh, that's kind of like a weird thought. But sometimes in a very different way, I feel like a punk rock Freemason. I don't really know how to explain that. But sometimes I feel like I'm not really part of this society that I live in. It just goes on and people ask me questions. Like recently, I played a pretty big festival with Insanity Alert. And I come back to Innsbruck and there's all these people that I see on a daily basis, like the girl working at the supermarket around the corner and this guy at where I changed my tires for cars and stuff. And all these people and girls that work with me at the restaurant and everyone, like they really have no idea, you know, because it's not the superstar Coldplay, what's on the radio and TV, but it's like they don't know what you do exactly. But then they see an Instagram post or a Facebook post and you're on a stage and there's actually a bunch of people watching me, you know, like we're talking a few thousand and like, hey, so how much money do you make with this? And still, you cannot explain it. Even at this level, you're not going to get rich from this, you know?
You have
a chance to play at this big festival and there's a lot of people and it's not for, you know, you don't play for free. It's not like $50 and a case of beer, but it's not going to pay my next Thailand trip, for example. A lot more of those shows if I want to do it like the real Thailand style.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't know how to explain it so well. I was talking to Lisa, but I was trying to explain it. But sometimes I feel that I'm not living in the same, it feels like a parallel universe almost.
I like that Freemason way of explaining it because I think that's my whole, I mean, I explored it in my book, Weasels in a Box. But the whole idea of calling myself semi-famous, I think is rooted in that idea because I could walk around the world and no one knows. But then someone I work with all of a sudden will say, I can't believe it. My friend's friend is like your hugest fan in the world. but it's like that friend's friends, you know, but then I can walk around the world and no one knows. But then there's these people that are like insane about, you know, the music. It does. So it pulls you out of your own life a little bit because you're not really walking amongst the people that are just doing the 9 to 5 or whatever and living your life, but you're also not part of that huge famous world either. You're like,
oh, and it's like it's not completely parallel. It keeps touching, you know, like waves. And sometimes you're in the middle of the regular party, and then all of a sudden, I was on holiday in Thailand, absolutely anonymous, walking around in my Hawaii shirt and my Crocs, and just walking around Bangkok and looking at temples and Buddha statues. And then at night, I go to a metal show and I'm standing there in this, like in my complete tourist outfit, swimming shorts, and this kid, 16, 18 year old kid, full with metal patches, like, you know, in this metal jacket. He's like, oh my God, are you from Insanity Alert? And Lisa looks at me like, yeah, whatever. She thinks, he thought I paid the kid, you know, like, and I'm like, no, man, he really recognizes me. And it was so funny. And it was like, wow, completely different worlds touching. Or, well, sometimes I bring my parents to shows, you know, it's also like mind blowing. It's like my parents are there, you know, I hang out with them. Now I've been living with them for 3-4 months. And I'm hanging out with them at the show. People's like, yeah, great show, Heavy Kevy. it's beautiful, man.
Do you feel like you have the same? Well, first of all, do you consider those different worlds? Is like your Kevin Apers different from your Insanity Alert in, I mean, it's like different labels, different audiences, or is there a big crossover more than you thought? What's your relationship to that?
The audience is really different. It's completely different people. But the way I get treated and the going to get really capiguli now, but the love and respect that I get out of it from both scenes is amazing. It's like, it's really, can only be very grateful for that. I started Insanity Alert 11 years ago and like I I listen to metal, you know, through the years, like every once in a while, like basically everyone that listens to music, you know, at one point there was no escaping Metallica when I was a kid and Pantera. And I have bands every decade that I was like, wow, Life of Agony, Faith No More. But to say that I was really deep into the metal scene would be really overdoing it. I've always been into punk stuff, you know, Ramones and stuff, but started playing and yeah, now I go to festivals and people come to see my band and I'm really involved in that scene as well. Not as much as with Monster Zero, but I know a lot of people. I've been to many places and it's amazing. People are great. They come to the concerts and really comparable in that way. Actually, they come to concerts way more than at the Aper shows. Yeah, a lot more people, but probably the metal scene is a lot bigger as well in the defense of the 1, 2, 3, 4 go punk scene.
Yeah, but you also found yourself, whereas Apers were sort of leading that movement at the time of pop punk, like in Europe. I mean, you and Stefan and even Mangies. It seems like, this is my perception from the outside, that Insanity Alert has been able to hop on like bigger bands and stuff. Has that helped you at all? Like,
yeah, we worked our ass off in the beginning to play supports. And that really, as we say in Holland, through its fruits.
I didn't get to say this to Kevin, but I knew what he was talking about because in English, we of course have the phrase, the fruits of one's labor.
Like it really had its seeds everywhere. We kept playing. But we also do a certain type of music with Insanity Alert that in Europe is not really done that often. It's also crossover style. So whether we play hardcore shows, thrash shows, speed metal shows, punk shows, We fit in everywhere. It's just super fast and hard, like a Suicidal Tendencies or a DRI, if you will. You know, like it's really crossing over to different scenes.
I'm just really curious about this. Not even asking it just as an interviewer. If I was with you, Kevin Howard, I would ask this stuff because I think it's fascinating. What do you think are the similarities and the differences between the like those audiences or just playing shows? Like, is there big differences in how it feels to you?
Nah. Not really. No? Not really. Like, it changes sometimes. When we did the 25th anniversary show with the Apers at the Punk Rock Reduno, we didn't do a practice, of course. That's what Apers hardly ever practice. So we went on stage. Everyone learned their songs. I think Mikey and Evo did a practice together. And we started. But yeah, I've been playing very fast crossover metal the last years before. So we start and I turn around to Evo and I'm like, hey, what the fuck is this shit? Why is it so slow? Why are we playing so slow? But then I realized, okay, no, it's a different band, you know, like we got to do it. And then it felt, after two songs, I was like, wow, it's super easy. I can do this for 5 hours because this is it's like playing acoustic after you just play the whole punk tour. It's different because Insanity got a lot bigger than the Apers ever were. But maybe that's also because the scene is just a lot bigger. You know, the festivals are bigger. In its genre, Punk Rock Reduno is one of the biggest festivals. And the Monster Zero Mash was always a happening. And if you consider that the Monster Zero Mash had maximum of 200 visitors, you know, like, and the Queers, when they do well, they draw 200, 300 people in clubs in Europe, maybe 500 in Italy. But that's really it. And if Municipal Waste or Suicidal Tendencies or DRI come, they draw bigger crowds. They play festivals that sometimes 20,000 people are watching them. So it's just a bigger scene. But as for the people, super loyal. People are helpful. Like what I said with the label, I couldn't have done it if all these people, like there's this 50 to 100 people that will buy every release. But with that knowledge, it's getting safer and easier and cooler to look out for new bands and say, okay, I want to do your record because I can offer you at least 50 people that will be into this, that will give it a chance, give it a listen. That's with Insanity the same at this point now. We put out a new shirt and we say, like, hey, we got a new shirt, and we have like 20 to 50 orders in a day, which basically finances the production of the
shirt.
And then the rest, gets put into our travel and, a little bit of money for ourselves.
I'm going to talk a little bit about Insanity Alert because I know I originally wanted to have one with you about that, but now you got so much going on, and I really do like the Sweatpants Party record quite a bit.
Thanks.
I haven't liked a pop punk record that much in quite a long time. Thanks, so I, So we definitely will be talking about that, but I want to hit a little bit with Insanity Alert, if you don't mind, more about that.
Future John here with my nice mic. I will actually say right here that I said that I would go right into talking about Insanity Alert, but as you will see in a moment, I launched right into Sweatpants Party, but I think I get back around to Insanity Alert. Back to me and Kevin.
Here's the one thing I'll say. I'll try to lead into Insanity Alert by saying this, that listening to the Sweatpants Party, it has that same, to me, Kevin, ability to just have a lot of fun. I mean, it's called Sweatpants Party. But and you use a lot of cliches, like in music. I mean, you know your brand of music. You know pop punk. You know the words that are used, brain, or, you know, something like, or party. But underneath that, Kevin, I always feel like you bring a little, like, genuine, unique, like, personal feel to that. Like, this record, even though it's all fun like that, I really still feel like this underlying sense of this is Kevin's story. Does that make any sense? Like, you seem to carry that underneath there while still at the same time trying to have fun and being humorous and even using the cliches, like, to your advantage.
That's really important to me. It's so cool that you say that. I just talked to Lisa. I talk a lot to Lisa because I've been in quarantine. So she's the only person that I see. Yeah, that's actually what I have been trying since I put out the 2009 record of the Apes. It was called You're Only As Strong As the Table You Dance On. And that was, for me, the first time writing a record without marine nicotine. I felt that it was time for me to not really work on it, but just like I had all these things on a voice recorder that basically everyone that writes songs have. And it was all these little snippets of, call it jokes, call it funny lines from soap operas and random stuff. And I thought, like, yeah, I could totally try to do like a Total by Teenage Bottle Rocket. Just like use, like, really like go hard in that 90s pop punk Ramones core thing. Just blast them out, like use every killer hook and talk about the prom and the high school dance. And which is weird because I'm from Europe. We don't even have those things. And I already did that. I did three records before with the Apes that were really based on that, and that I don't regret making at all, and that I still like. But I wasn't the 18-year-old guy from a small town obsessed with MTX, Quiz, Weezer, Groovy Ghoulies anymore. I love those bands, but... So I started in 2009, followed up by 2014 Confetti on the Floor, which really, for me, took it to an even higher challenge. You know, yeah, like, okay, I got to think outside the box, but stay in the box. Because that's most of the times the songs that do that. For example, Swiss Army Girlfriend, MTX. Genius. Absolute genius for me. And I was like, wow, how can I bring that kind of smartness into the songs combined with... And maybe even a Capigulli. I'm going to mention him again. Capigulli travels with my amp. Capi lives his life the way he is. That's something that I think after I turned 30, 40, I've always been learning more. You know, like, I enjoy certain things. Can I integrate my love for Ella Fitzgerald into a pop punk song? Can I talk about my shitty job at IKEA in a pop punk song? You know, stuff like that. And it's, of course, like Bloodbath of Burger King is also good. So there's many references and examples of that. But that's been my thing. And as much as I love to sing about Louise and Diane and stuff, I cannot do that because I'm married now and I've been with the same girl for 15 years. I have other things and other experiences. I go out drinking. Sometimes I go out drinking with people. It's like, hey, you're the same age as my dad. And I'm like, wow, that's fucked up. And then after 20 minutes, I think, wow, it's actually pretty cool because his dad is probably at home, passed out on the couch, and I'm still slamming tequilas with this kid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're still out there. It keeps you young a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I think so, man. Absolutely. But yeah, I just got to look at you. I got to look at some of you guys, you know, like, even if you look at Joe Quay, he's still doing it. And a lot older than me. I'm guessing that Joe Quay is older than me, but.
I think you're right. He's older than me, so he must be older than you.
It's a random guess. But no, but yeah, that is, and that with Sweatpants, this was a record that that's been laying around, and it's actually Apes songs. They would have been on an Apes record if we would have still been an active band. There's a lot of songs that I like, the Elevator. Yeah, I wrote it with Mikey. I actually didn't write it because it's just like one line.
Yeah, I love that one. That might be one of my favorites on the record.
And then I thought, like, wow, it's actually a metaphor as well, you know, like life goes up and down. It's like,
Yeah,
but
yeah, yeah.
that's what we played a show in France. We were super drunk. Ivo was driving. He said, like, I'm driving, so you guys have to load the van. And there's this elevator, and we have to put the stuff in the elevator, and just this song starts. And yeah, I wrote them down. I just write them all down, and now it's on the record.
You know what's funny about that? It's and you just said it too, but what's funny about it is maybe it's also being an artist and I think in metaphors, but you don't say it's a metaphor. It doesn't go anywhere more else than other that. Isn't it just that line? The elevator goes, you bring me up and down? Isn't that?
It's the metaphor for life, man.
What I think is it's fun. It's funny when you talk about minimalism because it like when I there's a philosopher friend that who tries to talk about the Ramones and he can't help but say that they're just dumb, but it's brilliant. Do they have any knowledge that their dumbness is so brilliant? You know, but the elevator song I think is brilliant because you even as a listener you're like, oh, this is going to go somewhere into a metaphor about, but it doesn't. It just stays.
It remains, but you don't want to get too Shakespearean on this thing, but
Yeah.
there were no elevators in Shakespeare's time, but who knows?
But and then I say the one I wrote down too is that I really liked a lot is I Got a Weird Brain. Is that the name of the song? Or is that I was just listening to it and writing down.
Yeah, the song is called Weird Brain.
Yeah, Weird Brain. Even that, once again, you're using like cliche words that, you know, the angry Samoans introduced into punk and stuff like that, and the Weasels use too, but there's still like a core of like this very genuine. I could tell you're like exploring yourself. Does that sound weird?
I don't know. Yeah, maybe I didn't set out to go exploring, but I think it just happens. Also, like bands that I love, like Queers or Social Distortion, they wrote some of their best records for me. You know, it's a matter of taste. But Don't Back Down is not the first Queers record, you know. And even Monkey Brain after that is so good, and Pleasant Screams, and that's when. If I do the math right, that's when Joe has almost always also has been have been in his late 30s, early 40s when he put out those records. So maybe it gets easier to go, because you know you can do the I want to take your hand and take you to the prom song. I could do a whole record. Maybe it would be good, but I could totally finish the record with all the hooks, the beginnings, the little licks in it. But just to try to do that thing that I love so much, and that I know that all the people that buy that get Montserrat's at records, they're also into that. That makes it so interesting, and that's why sometimes a record all of a sudden jumps out. Like, what's a record called from Masked Intruder, the first one, the self-titled Masked Intruder. I don't know if it was. I think it was self-titled.
Kevin is correct. The first Masked Intruder album came out in 2012 and was called Masked Intruder. Back to Kevin.
It's not completely the same scene, but it's also like, wow, it's really like actually the songs that we want to hear. He's going to this girl. He wants to pick her up from home. He's standing in the garden, and she doesn't like it's these little things in it that make it so funny. Or a Nerve Herder record when it came out, the debut album. Gotta think of a good local one, of course.
Here, Kevin brings up Shugus again from Spain, but his internet went all garbly gook. So I'll say that he was assuming they've been around since 1995, since they have a record called 1995, but that came out much later. It says here their first release was in 97, so it is possible that they got together in 95. I don't know. I'll have to interview Pepe in the future. Back to it.
They have been around for, I think, longer than the Apes now, probably 95, because the rec one record is called 95. But they just take turns and exits and change little stuff. What? Who does that?
Yeah.
Where does that come from? And that makes it so good and so exciting to listen to. And then one song is just completely basic, like boogada boogada boogada, you know. It does like, that's also cool, you know. Sometimes to bring it back completely to the original and just copy it. I try to do it on the Sweatpants record too. I think the world probably knows that I'm a huge Queers fan. I absolutely adore the Queers records. Yeah, I tried to reach something that he did, you know, with a Debra Jean or with a Peppermint Girl. For me, that's like the highest Queers, and to try to legally imitate that. I see it more as a tribute myself, but It's debatable.
And when looking at the way you, I think someone I posted last night on Facebook and asked some questions, and I didn't really get questions. I just got, hey, Kevin's a nice guy, and this, hey, he's putting out my record. Like, yeah. Well, these aren't really questions, everybody. But someone did hint at a question that I had myself, but I don't really know how to ask it. But it's obvious. I mean, even when meeting you, I knew you're heavily influenced by Weasel and definitely the queers. But also those people are heavily influenced by, especially Joe, by Beach Boys and stuff like that, a lot of 60s. Did your imitation, but also creating your own style, stop at that genre of music? Or did you delve into like listening to Beach Boys and those influences too?
I totally, man. Like that was the first thing I did. That's why I'm grateful that I discovered punk rock, because this punk rock helped me discover way more music and helped me listen to music differently. I got into music in the early 90s. So yeah, Nirvana, Metallica, and Green Day. Those were things in my small town. And then when I discovered Lookout, and also Fat Records, of course, and that opened the world to me. Two different songs. When I heard Lagwagon cover Brown Eyed Girl, I got a best of Van Morrison. And I got stuff from the Rolling Stones that my dad had, and I was like, wow, that sounds like that and that. Capigouli, and so yeah, I would get the suite through cover versions. And now this is a time before the internet, you know. So
yeah, no, you really had to search stuff out.
I absolutely loved it when Apple started doing Apple Music, or iMusic as it was called. At that point, like, it went to a different level. I got country records, and I got jazz records, and I got cumbia records, and that I was never gonna buy, you know. I was listening to it, and I hopefully pay for it, of course. It's all based client. It's hard to say when you're on a record label, but for me, that discovered more. But I never stopped listening. I never stopped exploring. Early 20s, Beach Boys, Buddy Holly, everything that Weezer and Queers would drop, I would get into that. 60s girl groups, and I started reading books about Motown, about the Ronettes, about Phil Spector, and that led to stuff like Velvet Underground, Stooges. Then I came out back to the Ramones again, and then I realized everything was connected. And then now I listen to cumbia, and I think, wow. Then now, recently I watched a Netflix show about Selena, who was apparently very famous in America, but in Europe, no one ever heard of her.
Cumbia is a style of Latin music that originated in Colombia and became popular throughout South America, Central America, and the United States. Traditional cumbia music uses a blend of African, Amerindian, and European styles, and uses musical instruments such as drums, flutes, maracas, and accordions. Back to Kevin.
And then she does a cumbia song. I'm like, wow, that's kind of funny. It's kind of weird rhythm, considering I'm from Gouda, the home of the Gouda cheese. And and then I started getting, oh, there's Colombian cumbia. Oh, there's Bolivian cumbia. And then now everybody in my surroundings hate me because I keep blasting cumbia everywhere. I could make your cumbia mixtape. It's perfect.
Is it hard for you then to, because like we said, we balance on it being a passion, but also a financial pursuits for us since we do it our whole life. But do you find that being influenced by that and then making that decision? I think you've talked a little bit about it in this interview already, but it's too outside of what you are known for doing that it prevents you from like doing that? Or are you just not interested in imitating that type of music yourself? Or is there actually a intentional not doing that because like, oh, that's too far for an audience to...
Yeah, it's actually a little bit true, but unfortunately to me, it sounds also... it's true. I would love to play jazz or sing jazz. If you would really ask a lot of people around me that know me well, they have all probably at one point been approached by me of doing something. Like either I was going to organize a jazz party, I was going to record some Christmas jazz classics, like Frosty the Snowman in the Ella Fitzgerald version or something. I was going to get a jazz band. I was going to learn how to play jazz bass, like the upright. But yeah, it's kind of like, I feel that I'm very musically limited for that. Then again, considering the fact that I was never going to be the singer of a heavy metal band until 11 years ago, and now, 11 years later, I'm the singer of not only a heavy metal band, but a heavy metal band that actually has concerts and played around the world and played shows in Japan, you know, and has a record deal in America. So the little bit the older I get and the more things I do, the more it motivates me to do other stuff. And that's also one of the reasons why I go to Paris now. I've been talking about it probably over 10 years with a lot of people from Paris, with like the Maladroit guys. And
are you going to hook up with John Vaughn when you're there?
I know. I've never met him. He walked by me once, but I was too chicken shit to say hello. So. He wrote my favorite ripoff song. So. I don't know if he still lives there. I should actually ask Kepi. But it would be cool to meet him at one point. I don't know if he would be. I don't know if he even knows me. He probably doesn't even know me. So.
No, I'm pretty sure he's still in. I think he's still in. I don't know where in Paris, but I'm pretty sure that's where he is. Or...
I guess a sign of a good conversation is me wanting to burst in with future John and fill in details. If you don't know, John Vaughn is actually John von Zelowitz, who was the first guitarist in the Mr. T Experience with Dr. Frank. He was on Everybody's Entitled to Their Own Opinion, Night Shift at the Thrill Factory, Big Black Bugs Bleed Blue Blood, Making Things with Light. Then he moved to Paris, France, which he is still there, and amongst many other interesting, strange 70s-influenced bands, he has a band called John and the Vaughns. Check him out. We've talked about him being on the show. I should probably follow up on that. Back to Kevin.
Yeah, I'm going to try to hook up with a lot of people. And yeah, the main thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to paint. I've been doing that with little paintings for the last 10 years. And it's been super fun. And it's actually been, yeah, I don't know if I'm good or not. Probably not. But that's not really matter. It's my negative punk rock thing for, yeah, we do it. We fuck up. We go anyway.
Yeah.
But I'm getting super good responses. And I've been... Yeah, I asked to do some stuff in Paris as well. And I feel I watched a lot of documentaries and movies about how people would go to Paris to do that, to follow their passion. And it's 3 months, so I'm probably going to drink a lot of beer and go to pop, which I always love doing. Yeah, maybe one day I'll start a cumbia band. So I'm starting playing solo shows again, just me and an acoustic guitar and some random shenanigans. Shenanigans, yeah. As it's called. So just with like, I want to do a smoke machine and a light show and maybe a little sampler. But now I just played 12 songs, most of them cover songs. But it was hilarious. The people came to, there was about 70 people in the audience. People clapped. No one ran away. They actually asked for an encore.
Wow. And wow. From you?
From me, yes. Of course, I gave him the whole 5 minutes afterwards. No, it's super funny as well. And it's easier without a band. You know, you just don't have to talk to anyone about what time we're going to be there. What can we do the show on that day? It's easier to travel, expect the little thing. But I suck at playing guitar. So I still have to learn that. But I always mention it to the people that want to book me. I said, okay, this is like a learning process. And you are a part of that. So you're going to be like a stage in the whole reaching the level of me finally opening up for Frank Turner. I keep tagging him on Instagram, but he has not replied yet. But if you know
someday,
John, please holler. So I got
okay.
Know this dude from the Netherlands, lives in Austria now, moved to Paris.
All right, I'll put a little note here. Put
Call Frank.
I don't know him, but I'll just call him out of nowhere and say, this is Jughead.
He's probably a Screeching Weasel fan.
Kevin, let's delve a little bit, like I said before, but we strayed away from it, but because I'm really interested in the insanity alert. I know, I think in person, just as friends, we've talked about it, but I'd like to do it publicly here. Is you've had the passion for metal music already, but was there any kind of moving into that scene that was more about, I don't know, were you aware of yourself as a punk walking into a metal world, or did you not think about that? What was your, like...
It's tricky because a little bit, but because of the genre that we sort of chose, it made it a little bit easier because I could always, like we met with the guys in the band, we met through at concerts and they would bring stuff like, yeah, they would play me like stuff, there's sometimes stuff that I know, like old Metallica, but they would also bring like Anthrax and Death Angel that I knew the names of, but I never really listened to the records. And I would bring them Gangrene and Adolescence, just fast punk hardcore stuff, you know, Poison ID. And we would like be like, what, it's kick ass. And they would play something. We're like, what, it's so hard. And that way, so when we started the band, I felt at home. because I knew that there were like bands before us, like DRI, like SOD, like Suicidal Tendencies, Nuclear Assault, XL, Wehrmacht, Cryptic Slaughter, that were all like sort of like just dudes like me from small towns, interested in punk rock, interested in like listening to Descendants and Ramones, but also listening to Dio and Black Sabbath. And I thought, like, yeah, I also like, there's also a lot of Black Sabbath songs that I like, or like Led Zeppelin songs that I like. And that's how it went on and on. And then, so I never felt like the outcast. I realized at some shows, and it kind of depends with if we open up for a band like Death Angel or Creator, that's full metal, you know, that's really talking like everyone, like metal patches, long hairs, everyone in black. But if we open up for a hardcore band or we did a lot of shows with DRI, then it's completely different. Then you see like weird, then you see like skaters, outcasts, snowboarders, punks. And then it feels like really like, wow, hey, there's my people. I loved it in the beginning because I went to random metal shows over the years. I lived really close to one of the best metal venues in Holland. And there were a lot of punk and hardcore shows as well. But sometimes, yeah, when there was nothing to do, I would go see a death metal band or a black metal band. But it really brought back those times. And I was standing there in my early, mid-30s, like, wow. And I just, sometimes I would just miss the show. I would be standing behind this big guy with like, with the leather or with the jeans, with all the patches. And I would just like studying, like, wow, okay, good. And I would try to bring Lisa to shows. Like, yeah, I really have to come because there's so much to see. It's an experience, man. It's like, if you go to some of these black metal shows, which is really, I'm really not that much into black metal, but when they start lighting the candles and then there's like the incense smoke and they come up with the masks and stuff, it's just, it's almost like theater.
Yeah. Oh, well, it is theater. Yeah. Yeah. It's not.
And yeah, it's just opened a new world to me. And, you know, I've seen the, all right, everybody with something, something's from that town. 1, 2, 3, 4. I love it. You know, 10 beers and I totally into the party, but I cannot stay in one thing by myself.
I was just wondering, and this is maybe me being my perception of you moving into that scene and unaware of that scene as much, but I wonder whether, I mean, you're a very charismatic person in the Apers. You like to talk to the audience. It's very fun. Like when I see you guys, I actually watch you guys because I mean, there's not many bands I admit that I watch. I just, especially being a short guy, you know, you get lost in an audience sometimes and it's no fun, but I actually do like watching you, and you bring something, you know, you have the, like Dr. Frank, you have the things that you repeat that you know that work comically in between, but then you're also in the moment still enough to respond to an audience. I think you're pretty good at that.
Thank you.
But I had wondered whether when you started doing Insanity Alert, I was in awe that you made a big splash in another completely different scene, but I wasn't shocked. But my perception was that you probably brought to them something they weren't used to seeing, but I could be wrong. But I don't know.
It's exactly that. In the metal, a lot of people think they ask my band members too, metal is different. Like, it's a bit, I don't know. It's not conservative, but it's just like different because it's got so big, so much bigger than punk probably will ever be. It's like, it takes a while for a band to get into the whole system, into the machine, you know? So there's not a lot of bands that have been doing this, and a lot of bands base their success on doing the apps. If you talk about cliches, a lot of metal bands, like a thing, like saying a thing like, hey, everybody, please do one step forward. It's super common. It happens basically when I'm on tour every second day. And that's taking it down. Stuff that say like, hey, thank you for coming. We got some merch for sale in the back. Those are like things that a lot of metal bands say. And I'm always like, dude, why would you? First of all, why would you say it? No one cares. And why is it important to the show? I look at the show thing from a whole different perspective, I think, than people that say that stuff. Do not give a fuck where the merch is at this point when I'm on the stage. I'm super grateful for people that buy merch. I bring it. I love putting it out good. I love hanging out there, talking afterwards, hanging out. But at the moment that I'm on the stage, why the fuck would I tell people where the shirts are? First of all, Do I assume those people are not smartest? No. People that come that found their way to the show will find their way to the t-shirts. Just like they will find their way to the toilet or to the bar. And then saying, I don't want to ask the people to come forward. I want to play good or at least offer something that people said, okay, that's cool. I want to make this step forward. So when I came into this metal scene, I started saying completely like thing. I would actually do the exact same as with the Apis, from, hey, please turn around. If you're not happy, turn around. But people at metal shows were like, what? But now, like, I do a lot of these stuff. Yeah, you've seen a lot of people that, most people that watch this have probably seen the Apis live, so they know how I do it, how I am on stage. I don't do it. That's really how I am. But when I do it in Sennelier, people come to the other band members afterwards, after the show, and they go like, is this guy all right? Is he really crazy? And they'd be like, yeah, I don't know, man. Like, not really crazy, but yeah, it's just fun.
He is what you saw.
And I go out drinking, you know, they ask me, do you want coins for the backstage? No, I don't want drinking coins for the backstage. Why would I spend the evening in a room with the guys that I've been just spending 8 hours in the van with? I want to go to the hall. I want to see the other bands.
Tell me about it. That blows my mind too, that people do that.
I just need a big locker, you know, to put myself safe and maybe just to catch my breath after a show. But 10 minutes after maximum 10 minutes after I've played, I'm gone. I want to hang around. It's my Saturday night as well, you know. Like you said, we don't get money. We don't get rich from it. So I'm there to have a good time.
Right, so you want to make your life, it is your life, so you might as well make it your life, you know?
Backstage, yeah, as much as I love to hang out with bands that all feel important and just want to sit in the backstage and drink stuff for free, I don't mind buying a cold Corona at the bar, even after spend €5 on that and just meet some new people and have to hear some guy like, yeah, that's really great, but it totally sucked that you guys didn't do a Rolling Stones cover. And then I can only apologize, like, yeah, Rolling Stones, one of the best bands ever.
Let them do it.
You do it. Grab my guitar. Go and say it. And he just, no, you're the singer. I said, that's a big plus for Insanity. And it took a while. And we didn't really take the easy road or the marked roads, you know.
But right.
We're getting to a point that we actually draw people and there's signs on the door. When we play a show in Germany or France, there's sometimes a sign on the door, just like a piece of paper. Don't bring your own confetti and macaroni. And I'll be like, well, we must have done something right, you know, because you all bring this back to us.
Something in there, Kevin, resonated with me and with working. Like, I've done a couple shows with my band, the Mitochondriacs, and you know, I was the lead and even in Blackouts, but I was really trying to push Liz to be that. So I didn't feel like I took on that alone. But Eddie, being the merch guy, always says before we go on stage, he goes, oh, remember to tell people to go, you know, to the merch table and all that. And I go, yeah. Okay. I got it. I feel like you do. Like, once I'm on that stage, it's about that stage. It's about who we are. And then it just leaves my head. And I think I'm realizing it now as I'm talking to you. It's like, oh, I didn't like purposely ignore saying that on stage. It's just that it didn't feel that this is what it's about.
Not the place. People know it. It's not 1965 anymore where people are like, oh, everyone knows. If you go to a concert, a band basically brings t-shirts and records to sell. And it's not yeah. It's not part of your show. But this is my opinion, man. It's like, it's like which side do you hang the toilet paper? Like, some people might not agree.
No, I know. I'm with you on that too. And I don't get offended when people do it on stage.
I don't want to touch the wall.
Well, mine, I have it go down. Along the back is how I
it's horrible, John.
Really? I don't know.
Touch the wall with your hands. It's poop on the wall.
We might have touched this on the Apers episode too, but how was it getting records? Like, you were like one of the first bands of the pop punk generation in Europe that took off and started forming a network. Was it easy to get those records at that time? I mean, you're not so old that you couldn't get records, but did you have to work to get records like that were influential to you, like Queers?
Nah, yeah. How do you know?
Yeah, I figured at your point it was pretty easy. There's like a record store there that you could probably get.
Between Rotterdam and Amsterdam and Groningen, there were. But when I was 17, my parents took me to the U.S. for a big holiday there. We went New York, California, Miami. And that's where I basically started my record collection. So that's where I got really, I brought an empty suitcase because I, 70-year-old guy, what do you need? You know, the land of unlimited opportunity. So I bought basically everything that I still listen to today from, I bought it in America. So, but it wasn't that hard to get them. And also the distributor of Lookout Records and the European distributors from all those labels. Epitaph was in Amsterdam. Fat Records was in Amsterdam. We were really close to the base for Europe, that is.
Yeah, I figured that too. That's good. It's good to hear that. What was I going to say there? This is a question that I do. You think I'm fascinated with your. I know people in like the Netherlands are more acquainted with English because it's more like it's more part of your culture to have different languages. But you do your grasp on it is actually really impressive. But I wondered, you personally, do you think you're funnier in Dutch than in English, or equal, or do you think there's a difference?
That's a good question. I think I'm way funnier in Dutch, actually.
Yeah.
I think so too. I really think so. It's but I don't know. It's very subjective. I don't know. But I think I'm funnier in Dutch than in English because I just think my Dutch is way better than my English.
Yeah, but I just wonder whether you're obvious accent adds to some of the comedy of speaking in English, and also as it's, I'm noticing that I'm learning Japanese by having fun with words. Like with me with learning with Nanako, I'll like make fake commercials based on new words I learn or stupid jingles. So I wonder whether there's like added comedy for you to actually explore words in English. You probably don't even think about that, but I wonder whether some comedy comes from that, like awareness of it not being your first language.
Probably. I also try to combine it a lot the last 10, 15 years. So if on the Confetti on the Floor record, there's a sentence, it's called take a seat or neat. That rhymes, but neat in Dutch is not. So you can take a seat or not. But because you say take a seat or neat, for me, I was like, wow. I have to write this down. And I started, I read a book about, it's not really a book, so it's a small thing. And it's about what really big top managers, Dutch top managers, said in English. So to their English counterparts. So they, in Dutch, we have a lot of sayings, like a lot of sayings are like the apple does not fall far from the tree. We have millions. The Holland culture is a really weird, weird culture when it comes to that. And there's like these top managers, like we're talking about brands like Philips and Heineken and Unilever. And sometimes they will say stuff and you'd be like, no, you can, it cannot be that you just said that. He will be like this guy from Philips. He went to dinner in England and he said, to the waiter, he goes like, yeah, tell your cock it's a lovely dinner. But chef in Dutch is kok. So he just randomly translated it. And that is like a part of the mixing that I am, thank God I'm able to do that because I speak Dutch fluently and then English and German all right.
Yeah.
And then I have hints of French and Italian. So last 10, 15 years, I also try to do that in my songs. I just try to throw in a Spanish sentence, you know, just randomly. Or take the Dutch words, translate them into Spanish. If it rhymes, use that.
That's fascinating. This reminds me, Kevin, I did a show quite a few years ago called The Fool. And part of the show was someone had said to me about theater that there should be no apologies, which means, you know, so I really took that.
There is none.
The theater being about, there is no apologies as a performer. So one of mine was this girl wanted to do a monologue about love. She was doing exploring the fool in love. Like we were all exploring different elements of what the fool means, you know. And she said, I want to talk about how difficult it is to be in this relationship with this person that I love. And I said to her, I go, why don't you do it in a language that's not yours? Because that'll accent the idea of how difficult it is. So, and she goes, okay, I'll do Italian. I've always wanted to learn Italian. So she had an Italian friend like translate this and she had to relearn it and try to express to an American audience her complications with love in Italian. And I love that moment. And what I was freaked out by, and this is so American and it pisses me off, is that all of the reviews like a lot of the bad ones were saying, how dare he have someone speak in like Italian? Like what is that? Like fluffy, just trying to be kind of, on the edge. And it's like, no, it's actually, well, first of all, you should be accepting of other languages. You don't have to understand them. I don't. But there's no reason to be like critical of someone speaking another language. But I just made me think of that what you have, which I think is great, is being able to use different languages and having them work off each other. And I tried to do that, and people don't react well to it often.
Nah, but if you start mentioning the press or people have an opinion about it, it's really tricky. Like on our third record, we had a song and it's called It Just Don't Matter Anymore. And then there were some people at this point, like really out there, just say to find anything that's bad or wrong with this record and just mention that. And this guy's like, it's not even proper English. Because the correct way of saying it would be, it just doesn't matter anymore. And I'm like, dude, have you ever listened to bands like the Rolling Stones? What are we talking about, you know?
Yeah, or wanna. Is wanna actually a word?
Yeah, it's like, come on, man. This is like the song that work just worked better. I don't even read reviews. This guy, Kasper Keen, guitar player from 20 Below, is now playing with the Apers. He has a restaurant and he spends his days sometimes writing or reading reviews on Yelp, on Unhappy Cow. I'm like, dude, just put the phone down. Just one people opinion, man. Doesn't matter, man.
I'll fight back just a little, but I also agree with you because it's hard. But I do feel like you are that. I don't know what you do is a relationship between you and the audience, and there is a point where you have to say fuck them. I have to do what I think is right artistically, but there is a dialogue. But I think what happens is the critics often don't be they're they don't be part of that dialogue as well as they should be. Not proper English. They don't be.
It's like looking at it through the wrong glasses, basically. You can only you cannot look at art as a reviewer. You have to look at art or listen to art as a spectator, as a witness. And that's most of the time they come in with the idea they have to say something about it, which is wrong. There was a time that me and Marine, we would actually criticize reviewers. When they would do a review on the Apers, we would write a review about their review. Just to irritate them. Because most of the time, like, it's not always like the big dudes writing for magazines. You know, it's just also sometimes just local guys working for a website. And you'd be like, dude, what happened to you? You know, like, it doesn't make sense with the person that you are. And then we would just take them out. Like, not take them out, take them on. It's like, hey, shitty written. This is exactly the same review. Because he would say, like, this sounds exactly like the Ramones. And I would like, wow, this review is exactly as the one that was written in this magazine 2 years ago about that record. It's like, or like take like sentences. Well, that sentence, using that sentence in a review of a punk band is super cliche. And the people, they would have no response to that, which is funny.
Yeah, I had a big, not a disagreement, but I took this guy. Actually, he was kind of a friend of mine in the theater world, but he really tore apart my show, and that's okay. But what I thought he was attacking was like, not, I don't know. Well, anyway, but it leads to that we went out to lunch and we talked about that. And I go, what's frustrating to me is, are you a reviewer or are you a critic? Because there is a difference. Like, a reviewer is going to tell people whether to go or not. To me, a critic is also an artist who's trying to help build a sound or build a scene or try to understand what an artist is doing in order to help. Like, what are you? And he says, well, in this world, it's really difficult to try to be one or the other because people want you to tell them whether to go or not, and they don't always care about my artistic, view of something. So I thought that's an interesting quagmire that reviewers are in.
Yeah, and the personal interest, John, are they trying to establish themselves as like the hard
Exactly. Right.
reviewer? Because there's something in it for them as well, you know? So like every band, like every painter, like every poet, everyone's trying to get somewhere. Whether you really said, okay, are you gonna be the Jello Biafra saying, yeah, fuck it, I don't care, I'm just playing for myself. I mean, like I'm mainly playing with myself, but playing for myself is a different thing because then I would just do other stuff probably. I don't know. It's tricky as fuck.
Yeah, I know that's why I don't write it off completely, but I do have my big problems with the idea of listening to criticism or even paying attention to it. But I do feel its benefits in some ways, but it's a hard relationship to
And
have.
if it's good, it's always a bit ego touching. So
Yeah.
if you get a good review, it's always nice. But if you
Yeah.
get a shitty one, or one that you don't absolutely do not agree with, unfair reviews are the worst. I try not to get round up anymore about reviews. I don't get so many. So.
Yeah, that reminds me of a. We'll touch on this quickly, and I think I have one more question. But there's, I talked to my girlfriend recently about, and I never get into big arguments. Like I don't fight, I don't yell or anything as much. I mean, unless I'm really, really pushed to my ends and limits. But I did tell her that you will see in me that if I argue about something, it probably means you have a point. So don't believe that me arguing with you is telling you not to tell me that. It's actually saying you're probably right, but I'm going to fight you about that. Because I have to think about it, because it's a real change in me that I have to make. Does that make sense? Like,
No, it makes absolute sense. I always, yeah, like it's hard sometimes to accept it. And then you sort of basically in convince the time you need to convince yourself is spent putting out arguments. But I recognize that with Lisa. But I also like to question stuff anyway, even if I'm not really sure about it. But people tell me something, I always wonder, like, is it really like that? Even if I have absolutely no idea of the matter or of the topic. That's also funny. So
I do want to touch back to this new record because, like I said, I really enjoyed it quite a bit. I'm guessing at this, but I think it's probably true. Is Casper also doing some of the word singing? Like, I think there's another voice in there too, right?
Jay from Jagger Holly and Johnny Three.
Oh, it's Jay. Okay. Is Casper still involved with this one? Or
at this point, is taking a little break. He
okay.
Yeah, he's one of the original members, but yeah, he couldn't combine it with the restaurant. So that's why we got Andy from 7 Years Bad Luck, also good friends of Mugwumms, also Monster Zero Band. He was feeling funk. He was actually a bass player, but he said, like, I can do guitar as well. And yeah, so now we're at the four of us. But Simona from Rico Bellis, Mikey from Bad Bites, Apis has played. And there's going to be probably a whole slain of other people. I'm going to go to Paris, probably do some shows with the guys from Maladroit, the French band on Monster Zero. But it's basically my band. But yeah, Jay, and with the recording, Jay played all the guitars. Frizzante, my good friend, played all the drums. We got Chris Mark singing. We got Paul from Radcliffe singing. We got the Shirley MacLaines, all-girl garage band, two girls singing with the IKEA song. We got a guy from a local punk ska band playing trumpets on one of the songs, because there's not a ska song, but I wanted the trumpet on the record.
Yeah.
So his brain almost exploded because I kept has to sound like a guitar solo. So he just had I never played a trumpet in my life, but he pulled it off. And yeah, Max Power, ex-Apis, you know him, you met him in Japan.
Yeah.
He did all this. I did the solos myself with the little tunes, but then the studio guy said, absolutely shit. So then we had Max Power coming in doing them all again.
Great. I didn't read anything about it, and it did feel like this collective album, but through your eyes. And I'm glad that I caught on to that. And sometimes that can annoy me because it's like, oh, look at all these people on this record. But it really holds it together well. Like, I think you did a good job.
Yeah,
on
it's all like little parts. I mean, like the basic is really just the three of us.
Yeah.
And then, without the guitar stuff, because I fucked that up myself. Apparently, bass people that used to play bass or play bass, they pull the little guitar strings too much. So everything was a bit, I'm going to go with dissonant. Some people would say it's out of tune, but I'm just going to call it dissonant. Not what studio guy agreed on. But yeah, it was great. We one day, everyone came in, Paul, Hank, all the Mugwumms, the Radcliffs, Andy 7 Years Bad Luck. Everyone came in. We had some beers. Then we finished the record. It was the first time after the first lockdown that we could actually all go outside again. And yeah, it's the record that I wanted to make. Confetti on the Floor is 2014. So it's 8 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. That I put out a punk rock record, and I'm super proud of it. And it was also great fun. Miro from Lone Wolf Bad Vibes did the artwork. Perry from Travoltas, he did the mastering and the sequencing and all that stuff, what it's called. I don't know, I paid him a shitload of money for stuff that I don't understand, whatever the fuck it is. And Stefan from Stardom didn't want to put it out because he's super busy. So then decided, oh, fuck, I have a label myself. So
Yeah.
It's out. Also, Dumb Records, Nas is putting it out on CD.
Oh, great. Yeah.
So it was a bit late, but it's going to come out on CD again soon on Dumb Records from Japan. So I got a lot of friends and people that I have on a very high level involved, and I'm going to try to expand that on the next records. So I'm working on the songs.
I don't know if you, I think you knew, but I did. I was asked to do a top 10, and I hate those top 10 things, but I decided.
Punk Rock Theory.
Yeah. But then I decided, okay, well, through the pandemic, what got me through it a lot was doing these 30-minute runs, and I actually just broke it down that way. And you got on there, the Apers got on there, and Mugwumps got on there too. So,
Yeah. Mugwumps, can I say? They started Monster Zero. Monster Zero was started because of the Mugwumps. It was the first release. At this point, it was vinyl, was different, and CDs were kind of cool. So no one put out a CD of the Mugwumps, and I saved my money from working that holiday. And I put out, with that money, I put out the first Mugwumps CD.
One last thing, Kevin, I don't know if there's an answer to this, but I know the vinyl once again is becoming more popular again, which I think is really cool. But also the mainstream is hopping on that too, and there's less plants. So here it takes a year for something to actually come out. Are you dealing with that too? Or do you have an in with some plants?
Here it's a little bit better, but so what did I do for the last? I clocked 4 months on the last, on the most recent releases. So the Sweatpants Party and the Wimpies.
Yeah.
Together. I did 4 months. So yeah, better than a year. There's been a lot of uncertainty about prices and about delivery dates and shipping dates. So we, as you might know, we have a war going on the continent.
Mm-hmm.
And it sucks. But yeah, it's apparently now the same as the COVID. It gets used for everything that's late. There'll be no chicken nuggets. And people say, yeah, it's because of the war. So kind of for me, at this point, I never realized that Ukraine was the center of the universe. But maybe I'm being super naive here. But I do understand that a lot of it has to do with oil.
Yeah. Once the oil goes up, it affects everything. The gas goes up, it affects everything. So you could technically blame everything on that if you wanted to. But where does that get you?
In a way, it has created a lot of understanding, too, from the people. Because, what you're going to do? During the pandemic, during those lockdowns, sometimes shipments from Monster Zero, so orders from people would get lost. Mm. And I'm not talking getting lost between Innsbruck and Chicago, but I'm talking getting lost between Innsbruck and Cologne, which is 600 miles.
Yeah.
And people were like, yeah, it's because of the pandemic. I'm like, fuck, dude. Why is this truck not driving? But people, everyone would be super understanding and saying fuck, can you do? It's not your fault. No, I'm not the one biting a bat's head off in a city in China. So
yeah.
It wasn't me, man. Like Shaggy always says, it wasn't me.
Kevin, I'm going to let you go. I actually could take this farther because I've been wanting to interview you for a while because I enjoy talking to you, but I will keep it there for now. So
it was great. Thanks so much for having me, John.
Yeah, it was great. It was great to see you and talk to you. So
I will send you the LP as soon as I get it.
Yeah.
But because of the war, it has not arrived yet. Totally got it. No. But yeah.
I put some chicken nuggets in there for you. And
it's going to be vegan chicken nuggets, but you don't taste the difference.
That's okay. No, I like vegan chicken nuggets. I do.
That's great. So yeah, thanks so much.
And hopefully someday we'll do that Japan acoustic tour that we talked about. I would love to do that.
I'm practicing, but we should do this. It was, if I remember that night in Osaka, it was absolutely beautiful with the food and the little bar. And every time I look at Wimpy's Facebook, they still have the picture of us. So it was great.
All right, Kevin, we'll do it again. Cheers to you.
Domo arigato. Agosamasu.
Domo arigato.
Ciao, dude. Elevator, yeah, elevator, yeah.
So far, if you are you, then you just got done listening to Elevator from Sweatpants Party on Sweatpants Party, released in 2022. Pick it up at Monster Zero. Thank you, everybody. Remember, Patreon, it helps out a lot. Upcoming, we will have Jessica Colombo from Mabel Syndrome Podcast, and we will also have Larry Damore from Peg Boy, and tomorrow I have an interview with Warren Fitzgerald from The Vandals. You have all of that to look forward to. Share this with your friends, post some reviews, keep punk alive, and all its adjacent, connected things, which is everything. Keep everything alive, my friends. Be kind, be generous, be forgiving, be obsequious, purple, and clairvoyant.